Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
All right, so podcast 80, which is awesome. We've come so far and so grateful for all of you who have stuck with us for so many years and so many podcast issues. Episodes, that's what they are, episodes. And today we're gonna be talking about how to handle long-term problems. We've been doing this a long time. A lot of you have been following us a long time and some of you are still dealing with some long-term problems. So if you're feeling hopeless because the problems you're facing, you know, they've been there for years, you know, maybe months, but sometimes even years. Today, Mark and I, we want to discuss what's going on with these type of problems and why this isn't a hopeless situation, but maybe give you some clarity on some things that you've been missing up until now. Before we get into that though, Mark, you want to share the client win of the week?
Yeah, it's always my pleasure to go over these. So This was a comment on one of our, in our Thriving Marriage Facebook group from a client of ours. There is consent to share. She just wanted to remain anonymous. So she writes, long story short, I had a rough year with COVID as I'm a nurse. It affected me and I struggled with stress and depression. Meanwhile, my husband got to be really close with an existing female friend at the gym. An emotional affair happened. My husband was convinced he wanted out and was even convinced the marriage was a mistake in the first place, claiming he had doubts without even realizing it a long time ago. So he was 100% sure and met with a lawyer, and he was cruel and mean, and I grumbled and cried daily for weeks, watched me suffer, but couldn't let himself feel remorseful because then guilt would mess with his mind. Well, I did the program. I took it very serious. I sat in front of the computer for a few days and completed the whole course in just a few days. However, some things were not fixed that quickly. But I listened to the coach Shane. She was amazing. And I'm going to just add our coach Shane. She is amazing. Even if advice was small acts and I felt like no progress was happening, it was. It all worked. Prioritizing self-care again made him to see a change and made him curious. Doing the opposite of what he expected me to do within an argument totally threw him for a loop. Everything she said worked. First, he started having conversations with me again. Then he eventually laughed and joked again. Then he came back to our bed because his back hurt from the other bed. Then eventually everything was normal again and conversation had to be held to know where I stood. I was going to hold off on the divorce, but I still don't see us working. Then it was, I don't want a divorce anymore. But I don't know if your changes will last. And then it became as if we were newlywed again. She goes on and says, just try the program. I couldn't afford much. And they worked with me to customize the smallest option of the PATH program. And she says, if you can afford more, please do. And I was on FMLA. I don't know what that is. Do you know? I'm not sure.
I'm not sure what that is either.
Because I was basically told out of nowhere, literally in the middle of supper, that he doesn't love me and he was filing. I was so lost and depressed and didn't know if I needed to move out or what. I needed off work and wasn't getting paid. They worked with me and really cared. Even the hard stuff that I didn't want to do, I did it and trusted the program because it was all I had left and it worked for me. Just wrapping up, take it serious. It's worth every penny because I would have gave up anything to keep my family together. Now we are not only together, but happier than ever. So these are the stories I absolutely love. I mean, this is why, Heather, we are in this work. We can see it makes a big difference in people's lives. And, you know, as much as we are, yes, a business, and we do need to make money. I know Heather and I were really conscious about what we wanted to do with business. And, you know, this is a big thing for us is being able to help anyone that we can, much like Cammy was saying, she struggled financially and we were able to work with her.
Right. And I just love, like, unpacking us just for a minute, you know, she started in a place of absolute stress and depression. Her husband was cruel to her, is what she felt like. She felt like he was just watching her suffer, and she really had nothing left, right? But then she said it was her last thing that she could do, her last kind of leg of hope, was doing the PATH program. And in a few days, things started to change. They weren't completely fixed though, but then you can see all of the progress there, right? I love that they did like the opposite. She says doing the opposite of what he expected me to do in an argument totally threw him for a loop. And right there, we call that a pattern interrupt. And it gets your spouse curious about these changes that you're making and wanting to know if they're for real and what's going on with you, instead of doing the same pattern over and over and over again, which Mark and I are going to talk a lot about those same patterns that we fall into and sometimes do over and over and over again for weeks, months, sometimes years. Mm-hmm. And so that pattern interrupt there got his attention and made him curious. So I want everyone to keep that in the back of their mind as we go forward in what we're going to talk about today. And just going through all of that and knowing that you could go from the place where you're unhappy, they're emotionally connected to someone else. They might even be having an affair, even emotional affairs in Cammy's case here. But to the point now where they truly feel like they're newlyweds again and that they're happier than ever. That is possible, but it's only possible if we start to do some new things. So let's bring this home to our topic today about these long-term problems. What kind of problems are we talking about when we're discussing what's considered a long-term problem?
Well, I think a lot of times, you know, by the time someone has come our way, you know, we'll admit that we specifically try to market towards a certain kind of audience, people who are having big marriage trouble. And I think a lot of the problems that people come when they get to our to us are these long-term problems. They're seeing disconnection. Like maybe it's been years and they've just been slowly pulling apart. Maybe it's something big like an affair, but I would, you know, even something like an affair, even though it's this discrete moment here's this affair. It's the result, I think, of the something long-term. You might have other issues like apathy where you just don't really care about what's going on in the relationship anymore. Or you might have big spikes in tension and you have a lot of arguments. It might be even other more mundane things like parenting style differences that lead to other problems or, and this is a common complaint, you know, that our clients talk to us about, that their spouse is saying that they've been controlling and there's this controlling behavior. But basically we can go on and on and on. Basically, most things that will destroy a marriage over time are problems long in the making. All of these, it's very, very seldom is there a single distinct moment where a problem occurs and then now the marriage is over. It's everything builds up to these sort of things. So I would say anything, you know, this is basically any marriage destroying problem is probably a long-term problem. So we see this a lot. I mean, I think this is, you know, essentially our bread and butter here with a lot of what we deal with, Heather, with High Thrive Coaching. So I think this is a really important topic. I think a lot of things fall under this umbrella. So let's talk a little bit about why these things happen. You know, I think a big thing that I see, and this applies to several of the principles, is that there is some amount of resistance to solutions. You know, we have controlling behavior, arguments, apathy, disconnection, and somewhere in here, there is some amount of resistance to doing something different. But let's talk about this. Like, why would there be resistance? And what are some of the things that make long-term problems persist? What do you think, Heather?
Well, you know, as we talk about here that sometimes there's the reward for those things in some way, that this problematic behavior is giving us some kind of satisfaction or helping us numb ourselves from something, helping us distract from something. So like an example of that would be turning to drinking or drugs because we have this anxiety or we have this depression or we have these negative disconnected feelings from who we really are. And so rather than dealing with those feelings, dealing with the past traumas, dealing with those hurts that are present in us, we want to distract ourselves from them. You know, the same thing could be said for affairs, stonewalling, disconnection. We see all of these different examples. And it's probably something that we're not really conscious of, or our spouse might be conscious of, that these really destructive or unhealthy behaviors are rewarding. However, we wouldn't continue to do them if they weren't at some level. And so they're probably not consciously aware that they're getting some reward or benefit there, but we definitely see patterns like that.
You mentioned, you know, a couple here which don't initially seem rewarding. I mean, I think most people can understand on some level how drinking or drugs could be rewarding. I mean, we kind of have this basic understanding like, hey, there's some sort of high or there's some sort of numbing behavior. And I think most people can understand on some level why even something like an affair would be rewarding in some way. It's this exciting, secretive thing. It's a, I'm getting to know this new person. But other things like stonewalling, arguments, disconnection, I think that's a little bit harder to grasp. Like, how could those things be rewarding? So something like disconnection, I can very easily imagine a scenario where someone's saying, I'm really tired. It's the end of the day. I don't want to deal with anything because I just want to relax and I don't want to deal with my wife. I don't want to deal with my kids. I'm just going to pull back. Or, you know, stonewalling, you know, I don't want to continue this argument. This feels really uncomfortable to me. I'm just going to not say anything because I'm not going to be heard anyway. And so I do think, like, you know, as I'm kind of getting into the head of someone who's doing what should seem like this, there's no reward there. In a roundabout way, it is providing something. And a lot, so like the stonewalling or the disconnection tends to be, hey, I'm calming things down. I'm trying to remove a lot of tension or drama or other things like that from my life. And I do find that, you know, in most of these cases, you know, whether it's the drinking, the drugs, the affairs, the disconnection, the arguments, a lot of times there's justification for this behavior. There's some sort of reason or logic. And I'm going to say reason or logic, but it's not really 100% always logical, but there's somewhere in there, it makes sense in some way, even if it, you know, if you really scrutinize this behavior, it wouldn't. So what are we talking about here? Like, let's go back into these really more difficult or odd sort of problematic behaviors that don't seem rewarding. So like, I work with couples, Heather, and, you know, a lot of them that will tell me, they have a lot of arguments and they're saying, well, I don't know why we have our arguments. Neither of us like having these arguments. And, you know, we can't seem to stop having these arguments. So why are these things persisting? And we get in, and this is the second piece here, that why things persist long is because of this justification. So you have arguments like this and I start digging in and I hear things like, you know what? I'm not going to let them do those things to me. I'm going to stand up to myself. I'm not going to let them control me. They're not going to be able to speak like that to me. And so there's like this, some amount of justification, this logic attached to these problematic behaviors that this is the right thing to do. What about like something like disconnection though? Like, how would that even be the right thing, Heather? What do you think?
Well, there's also the, you know, that the disconnection, if you're feeling like I just need to pull away, I need to recoup, right? I need to re-energize myself. And there may be some truth to that. In fact, you probably do need to take care of yourself better if you're feeling so exhausted and so burnt out. But justifying pulling away from your partner completely would not be the healthy form of how to get those needs met, right? So saying, I need time for myself. They don't want me around anyway, right? We always just get into fights and I just can't deal with it. Or maybe I'm not important to them. We have no connection anyway. So what does it matter? That kind of sense of just absolute hopelessness or apathy there, right? My friends, a fair partner at work, they understand me better. Right. So there's that goes into a little bit of that affair. Like I'm going to pull away from this person, my spouse, because they don't connect with me. They don't understand me anyway. And this other person does. And it feels more easy. It feels more effortless. There's less pressure there. So all of these kind of come up as unhealthy behaviors. Right. But from some, sometimes they are real needs that need to be met. It's just that pulling away from your partner isn't how you're actually going to get those met anyway.
I like what you said there, like that a lot of times these sort of behaviors, there's some amount of truth in there. And this kind of circles back to our first point that the problematic behavior is there's a reward to it. It's, there's something about it that there's a reason why it keeps happening over and over again. If there was absolutely no truth to it whatsoever, even on a small, minuscule scale, it probably wouldn't be happening, even if that truth is really distorted. You know, I could see in a really unhealthy situation where they would say, you know, my spouse is a terrible person and they're undeserving of my love, and you know, turning into this abusive situation, which I'm not condoning that. I'm just saying, here's this quote unquote truth that the person is holding on to. And this justification for their behavior. Now, you know, with us, we always say, okay, situations like that where there's this abuse going on, this is a completely different topic and I'm gonna go off on a small tangent, but that's not a marriage that we should be fighting super hard to save, unless there's a lot of work done on both ends. But I'm just saying, like I'm just making a point here that even something really unhealthy that seems outwardly like there's no justification to it, somewhere in there the behavior, they keep coming back to it because they have found some amount of truth or logic to it and it's rewarding in some way.
Right. And if we think about a lot of the internal emotions, sometimes there's a lot of insecurity, which then causes us to try to stonewall or disconnect, because then that gives us some amount of control over a situation that feels very uncontrollable. Right. And so pulling away from it so it doesn't feel so insecure anymore gives us an amount of like self-empowerment as well, which can be another way that it could be rewarding.
So Heather, you know, what about say you and your marriage or me and mine, like, do you, looking back, do you recognize times when perhaps you were approaching some problematic behavior or justifying some problematic behavior in your life?
Absolutely. Yeah. So just sharing that to make it real. And, you know, I can think back on many of our clients that struggled with problems for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. And I know that we would be in the same place because we struggled with them for a good 8-9 years. And we've been married 15 years. So the majority of our marriage, we had some very unhealthy cycles there where there would be some kind of contention, right? Some kind of disagreement or some kind of feeling of I'm feeling threatened by his connection to his family. And I feel like that's more important than me. And it all stemmed from a deeper insecurity. And so when I would feel him pulling away, then I would justify in putting the pressure on our marriage and kind of having a blow up. Like I would not deliberately, but I would create a situation where he couldn't run anymore. Like we had to confront the problem. And my justification was, and I don't know, I'm sure if this was so conscious, but I felt like that was the only way that we could resolve it. So my justification was that the only way to resolve this was to force him to engage with me and it would be a blow up, but then we could finally resolve it. And like that goes right into the, this is the only way, or there's no hope. It doesn't matter anyway. So I didn't know any other way to solve it. And we continued to go in that pattern. I justify saying, I can't live like this. I can't live with him pulling away and having no connection here, that's not going to work for me. And the only way that I know how to do it is to cause a blow up to happen. So I would justify that over and over and over again. We got caught in a really vicious cycle that make him pull away more, which then would make me chase after him more and pursue, right? And justify having these arguments because I felt like that was the only way we got anywhere. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think, you know, we were talking about this dynamic, what was it, a few weeks back, about that this pursuer and avoider dynamic. And I feel like I lie on the opposite end of the spectrum. In terms of like problematic or justifying certain behavior, I recall earlier in my marriage, you know, there's some persistent problems that needed to be dealt with. And my wife and I would get into these discussions and I would just shut down. And I would think in my head, you know, well, nothing that I say right now can do anything. It's not going to help anything. It's not going to make any difference. And I would just, you know, when we would have these really serious discussions, I would just get really quiet. And this really, it bothered my wife, Jen. Now we've gotten to a much better place. And I can still even now like feel a little bit of that, like shutting down if we're having like a really serious discussion. But I would say, okay, you know what? Actually, I do need to speak up and I need to vocalize what I'm thinking. I would say, this is really important for Jen, you know, for me to be active in this conversation. But there was that justification. It was this idea that nothing I say will be helpful right now. And this was this truth that I was stuck on, even though it's not really the truth. It was an excuse. And this is why we get into these patterns of behavior. I do think that this is a big part of what continues these long-term problems. We have this reward and we have this justification and we settle into these patterns, and the patterns become comfortable because they work in some way. Somewhere in here, the pattern works. You know, you mentioned Ben, he would retreat in some way that worked for him. And in some way for me, it worked to be quiet. And it, you know, I imagine there are times when you pursued Ben and he probably worked with you on those problems sometimes, even though it might've been difficult, and it worked on some level. Just like, you know, in some unhealthy situations, we complain and we disparage our partner, you know, in ways of trying to bring up concerns, because on some level it works. If we complain and we say, you're doing this wrong, perhaps they'll correct their behavior. And that's why these patterns come into place. They're typically, whatever is persisting here, it's an easier solution. It's a shorter solution and it works on some level for whatever you're trying to solve.
Right. And another thing that we see is that when it works, then we tend to do it more, right? Yes. And the pattern becomes stronger and stronger and more ingrained in you. It feels like this is the only thing you've ever known and the only thing you ever will know, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. People will double down on those solutions because they're saying, well, I don't know how to do anything else really well. This has worked. I'm going to push harder. And you were describing exactly that. You were saying Ben would retreat. And so you would create these situations where you would push and push until he couldn't retreat anymore and you doubled down on it.
Yep.
And it worked on some level.
On some level, but it didn't work great. But then what happens is then we start to lose hope in it working anymore. And it becomes so unhealthy that then we say, okay, this isn't going to work anymore. And then you give up hope and you think, well, this problem will never be resolved. We're not compatible, mm-hmm. right? I never loved you anyway. Remember that at the beginning, our client there, that was exactly what she said, Cammie, yeah. was that, you know, there wasn't hope of it working out any other way anymore. And so that's when things become really, really severe, because these patterns, while they work in some fashion, they tend to spiral to the ground until it's just like, I don't have hope anymore because I don't have any other skills. I don't know what to do. Everything I'm doing isn't working. And so like, even her husband said, I never really loved you. Like, we'll hear things like that, which wasn't true. It's just that you didn't know how to do life together in a different way. You didn't know how to solve your problems in a different way. Mm-hmm. So Mark, I would love to hear some maybe tangible examples of what you've seen working with so many clients now, of what some of these patterns might look like that might help anyone listening to be like, okay, that makes sense. That's clicking. It's giving me an aha moment. I can see how some of these patterns might be in my own life or my own marriage.
Mm-hmm. So like, as an example, we might have someone like Jacqueline who they become worried. She becomes worried about her marriage, and she might frequently express concerns to her husband, Sam. She says, you know, she might check in with him, and she might, you know, make sure that he's not out with other, you know, other women, and might do a lot of things like that. And so Sam then becomes overwhelmed with all this drama and lack of trust, and he retreats. Jacqueline, in this case, would become more worried and express more concerns towards Sam and suspect more problems with them and push harder. And then so it gets into this cycle, and it ramps up and up, and the pattern, it feeds on itself, is something that I'll often say. Or we have someone like Roger, who likes things done in very particular ways. And he's organized and very neat. And he might get upset when Susan, his wife, wants to change things in their schedule. Maybe Susan's a bit more of a flexible person, spontaneous person. And so if Roger is getting upset when Susan wants to make changes to their schedule, Susan learns not to talk to Roger about her plans. And what happens is then a lot of Susan's plans become these spontaneous announcements, and Roger gets upset when Susan's plans might interfere with his own expectations for the two of them. So then Susan works harder to have her own space and retreats further. And we see how this then feeds on itself. Oh, and you know, each of these things, we can see certain solutions that are probably working in some way. Jacqueline, who's worried about her marriage, probably goes to her husband, Sam, and there's probably times when he tries to reassure her. And then he reassures her and he reassures her, and it just becomes too much. And so he says, here's my solution. I'm going to retreat. And I'm going to dismiss what she has to say. I'm going to get upset maybe when she's bringing up these concerns, and maybe she backs off a little bit. And so here's a solution. And then he backs off more, and you know, it provides that relief. And we can see in each of these examples, everyone's behavior works in some fashion, but each of these behaviors also creates that pattern.
Yeah.
And this is a very, I'm gonna tell everyone here, this is a very important concept to recognize where your patterns are creating the situation that you're in right now. Mm-hmm. And if you don't recognize these patterns, it becomes very difficult to make adjustments and get out of these cycles. You know, as an example, you know, in terms of these patterns, I mentioned earlier, I was saying, okay, I wanted to do something different with my wife. And I could see that going quiet and not engaging in the conversation was making things difficult, even though this was a pattern that we had built up over years. And you're going to have, I don't know if you guys can hear that. I live right by this big river, and there's a train that goes by about once or twice a day. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so I had to look at the pattern of behavior, and I had to say, okay, well, what part am I responsible for? I could tell my wife, I could say, you need to back off and don't talk about this, which I know a lot of people do. But it didn't really address the issue really much at all. And so looking at the pattern, what I was responsible for, I said, okay, I need to shake up my part of the pattern a little bit. And I'm going to speak up more, and I'm going to push through a little bit of that discomfort. Even though it's a little bit uncomfortable, this is important to me. And by changing my side of the pattern, it allowed for Jen to approach these kind of conversations a lot more easily, level-headed, a lot more calmly. So I want to go to your example then, Heather. You know, looking at the pattern of behavior that you and Ben were in, what did you have to do there?
I think like you, I had to have awareness that it wasn't working. And beyond just having awareness, because I did have awareness, like this isn't the marriage I wanted to have. Mm-hmm. This isn't how I wanted to solve problems. I don't think either of us really wanted to sign up for this. And so that could easily spiral into, well, it's hopeless. We're not compatible. We're not soulmates. I never loved you. You know, and we could go down any one of those paths. But instead, I think it's really crucial for everyone to see the possibility of change and to recognize that these patterns, while they may be very dominant and very strong for the, you know, years, even in our marriage, that it is possible to learn a new way and that change does start with us, just like you said, Mark. Mm-hmm. So having that awareness that it's really not working and that this is kind of the pattern that we're in, and that recognizing that we can do something different, we can change this pattern, and I'm the one that has to start. I cannot expect my husband or my wife to be the one. I can't put the blame on them and say, well, only if they did this, then I could change my pattern. Then it'd be easy to change. Of course it'd be easy to change, because you're taking all the responsibility onto someone else and getting all your needs met. So we can't look at it that way. And we know that in many of our clients' cases, and most of the people listening probably, their spouse isn't willing to change. They aren't willing to look at themselves. In fact, many of them are checked out, wanting a divorce, pulling further away from you. And so expecting them to be the one to change is only going to frustrate you and lead to, you know, not good things in your relationship. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was recognizing that it wasn't working, that it was possible to change, and then a pattern interrupt. How do we interrupt this pattern? How do I do things in a different way? Like you, taking accountability for what my part was. And for me, in my specific situation, this isn't going to apply to everyone, but for me in that pursuer avoider role, I needed to recognize what his needs were, that he processes things emotionally very differently than I do. I want to resolve them in the moment. I want to get it on and get it over with, right? And he needs time to think about it. And so I had to ask myself, is it more important that I get my need met and resolve it, but it's not actually working? It's actually ending in not resolution, it's ending in more damage. Is it more important that I try to get my need met, or is it more important that I give him some space? And I say, you know, now how we handle it is I give him that space and say, when in the next 24 hours would you like to talk about this? I'd like to talk about something. When the next 24 hours works for you? And he usually gives about 12 or 24 hours, and I give him that space, which is enough time for him to be able to process through things. And then we're able to have a much more calm and understanding kind of conversation. So that was the pattern interrupt there, was that I couldn't just plow ahead with my insecurity and my fear and everything. I don't know, you guys can probably relate to this, but it feels like a huge like fire or wave inside of you that's just like rushing to get out. At least that's how it feels for me in my processing of things. And I want to get it over with and push forward. And so I had to learn that I could still get my needs met and I could still get his needs met, and that you had to give that give and take there. And that was the pattern interrupt. So instead of pushing forward, I'd say, you know, when the next 24 hours do you want to talk about this? And then he's like, whoa, that, you know, we talked about Cammy and her husband there saying that got his attention. I did something in a different way and that got his attention. And they say, okay, wow. And he was like feeling understood. Right? He felt like, wow, Heather is giving me some time to breathe and she's understanding me and she's helping me with what I need right now as well, which then took his defensiveness down and his impulse to retreat was no longer there because he now felt understood. And my impulse to just plow ahead also wasn't there anymore because I felt secure knowing that we would address these things.
So I don't know. Yeah, no, that's a great example. I wanted to share one more story because this was, it really stood out to me when I heard it. And I don't know if you've heard this story. I can't remember where I heard it. I want to say it was in like a Tony Robbins sort of video, but I remember someone talking about this sort of pattern interrupt situation. And it was also in the context of a relationship where the husband and the wife would argue quite frequently, and the wife would like do this in public places sometimes and would like insult him, whatnot. And I do think this was like a Tony Robbins story. And I think the advice given to the husband was like, you need to do something shocking to interrupt the pattern when these arguments are coming out. And so they're out to eat at dinner, and the wife started complaining out loud, like in the middle of the restaurant, about some of the things that he was doing. And he just started unbuttoning his shirt. And as she continued to argue, he just kept, he undid his tie, and then he kept unbuttoning his shirt. And she's like, what are you doing? He's like, well, you're doing something ridiculous here, and you're yelling at me in the middle of this restaurant. I'm doing something ridiculous in return. And she stopped for a minute, and she's like, oh, I need to stop doing this. I'm not suggesting that all of you out there start undressing when you're in public, when your spouse is getting into one of these patterns. But it's a good example, because it's something that caught the attention of his wife and really interrupted the pattern that they were getting in.
Right. Humor is a beautiful one as well. One of the things I really love that we do here with our clients, Mark, you're the head coach, and we have coaches as well, is helping people understand what is going to be that pattern interrupt. How can you prevent yourself from going down the same road you've always gone down, and help your spouse see that, oh, something's different here. We don't have to keep doing the same thing. We can choose to do something different. And when you choose to do something different, then you get a different result in your life. And that result can be as beautiful and glorious and amazing and blissful as you want it to be. It's a choice. So we need to be more aware of what we're doing and interrupt those patterns. Just a side note, if I can, before we go to Marriage Mythbuster, but all of these are really a lot of internal patterns that we have inside ourselves. We get stuck and so addicted to our own emotions and our own thoughts, our own limiting beliefs, our own cycles of pain and anxiety and depression, that we don't even recognize that they're running the show. But the incredible, beautiful thing is that we can bring just a tiny bit of awareness and say, you know, I'm not going to go down that road today. Okay, thank you, negative thought, self-defeating thought. Thank you for, judging that person and comparing me to that person. But I'm not going to listen to you anymore, right? And I'm going to choose a new thought. And when we choose new thoughts, we actually literally rewire our brain, and we can create a new reality because we're changing from the inside out. And that's the kind of level change that we really need to experience in this life to see transformation, not only in ourselves, but in our marriage. And so that's the level of change that we focus on here at High Thrive Coaching. Isn't the surface level. It is about going deep and experiencing life from the truth of who we really are, and letting all the rest of that just fall away like a snake shedding its skin, because we do not have to live that. It's our choice where we go from there. So that being said, I'm in my own journey right now of every time I recognize a negative thought, I'm like, I do not want to be that person. And so I pattern interrupt myself. I'll snap my fingers, and my kids are like, oh, there she's going again. She's being weird mom. But I'll like snap my fingers, or I'll take a couple deep breaths, and I will say, okay, how do I really want to feel? How do I really want to think about this? Who do I really want to be? And then take a couple heartbeats just to listen. And then I can choose something different instead of keep going down that same path again and again and again. So as we make those kind of changes, not only do we transform our own lives, but we truly can transform our marriage. And you guys can experience that just like Cammy did. Just like so many of our clients. I know, Mark, you just interviewed Venus last week, which was awesome. So that being said, let's go to our marriage myth buster. All right. Marriage myth buster.
Yeah.
The differences will ruin your marriage.
Yeah. Sorry. So, no, fine. So just to repeat, because I think we're speaking. So differences will ruin your marriage. This is the myth that we have. And we hear this a lot. We say, okay, we're just too different. And we're not compatible.
Compatible, right.
And where the myth comes from, here's the thing, is many differences have the potential. They can ruin a relationship. So there is a small nugget of truth here, especially if they're not handled well. Now, if we even look at statistics, certain factors actually lead to increased chances of divorce. Differences in religious beliefs or entirely different faiths would be one factor. cultural differences or differences in upbringing. And I remember being specifically taught something in terms of this. They said, you know, when I was being taught, they said, okay, when you're working with a client, don't just assume because, you know, I'm a white male, grew up in middle-class family. Like if I see someone else who's a white male, middle-class, don't assume that we have the same culture and understanding. I might have much more in common with someone else of another race and another socioeconomic status. It's just, we don't want to make assumptions. But anyways, cultural differences, wherever they come from, how you are brought up can make a big difference, especially if they lead to differences in values. You know, things that are absolute, especially. So we're talking about like these things that statistically speaking, they have the potential to create more discord within a marriage. But at the same time, this doesn't speak for everyone. And so there's certainly many people who have these sort of differences and do just fine. I can remember one of my best friends growing up, he was a neighbor who lived two houses down. And the mom was this Black Southern Baptist, and the dad was this white Jewish gentleman from, you know, who grew up in the North. And so, you know, you would assume that, you know, with the differences in faith, differences in race, and, you know, differences in cultural, just different parts of the United States would create a lot of problems. But I distinctly remember growing up like that my friend, his parents seemed really healthy together. They seemed to work well together. They seemed to do great. And so, you know, I'm looking at this, you know, I'm like, what, you know, later on when I'm saying here, all these are factors that could lead to more discord in a relationship. You know, we have this kind of idea as well that we have statements like opposites attract, which I'm going to just say is generally false. That's a discussion for another time. But statements another like this come. What was that? Yeah, another myth.
Another marriage mythbuster. Yeah.
Statements like this come about because many times there can be balancing behaviors within a relationship that can work quite well. If one person is a little quieter and provides a calming presence versus a very active person that can bring a lot of fun and excitement into the relationship, that can sometimes be a nice balance. And this is actually what the factor is. This is like what, you know, so we can say statistically, this can create more problems. Where it becomes healthy is, and where it can ruin versus strengthen a relationship is where there is appreciation for those differences or for your partner in general, and whether there's acceptance and flexibility in areas where there are differences. Back to my friend, where statistically speaking, this should have been a more rocky, more discord-laden relationship. And I remember feeling a little bit jealous because I know he got they celebrated Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and Christmas, and he got presents for all those. I was thinking, well, lucky him. But like what I'm getting at here is, you know, and I'm not gonna say this is everything in that relationship. You know, I was a kid, I don't know much about their inner workings, but I'm gonna point out that they had flexibility and that they embraced each other's values and traditions. And so right here, that factor of appreciation for those differences made, you know, at least from my perspective as a kid, seemed like it made that relationship work very well. And so if you find that your partner is saying we have too many differences, it's really a statement of saying there isn't enough appreciation for the differences that we do have, in my opinion.
Thank you. I'm going to say one of the things I'm so grateful about in my relationship is that about every week, Ben and I will make some kind of statement that we're so grateful for our differences. It sounds like Ben will say, I'm so grateful that you push me. I'm so grateful that you helped me grow, and I would not be doing this if you hadn't been in my life and encouraged me to do it. And he looks back and is like, wow, you know, you really brought a lot of strength to our relationship with that. And just this last Saturday when we went on a date, I was like, I'm so grateful that you are so fun and lighthearted, because I can be so serious and just so much of like a go-getter that I'm like constantly going, and I don't remember to just have fun and be lighthearted. And I'm so grateful that he brings that to my life, because I crave it and I need it. And we do bring such incredible strengths to our marriage. And so rather than being threatened by our differences, or, you know, putting each other down because of our differences, not appreciating them, truly being grateful for them brings a lot of healing and incredible joy and variety to life, which is really, really beautiful. So
at the same time, like that same scenario has the potential to create a lot of discord if that appreciation wasn't there. If you were saying Ben isn't serious enough, and he's you know trying to make jokes when we're trying to get things done, or vice versa, and if he's
and we've been through all of that. So I definitely would say that it's like a sword, right? A two-edged sword. So you can go one way or the other. We've definitely experienced both ends of that. And so choosing deliberately to appreciate rather than to get frustrated, and also just understand where we're coming from. That's the whole path process, right? Is getting each other's perspective on how we view life, how we view the relationship. And then that gives us that empathy and compassion that builds that bridge there rather than dividing us further.
Exactly.
Awesome. All right. Well, if you are needing more help with this, we encourage you to book a free call with us. We will go and do a deep marriage analysis on a session with you. And you can book that over at highthrivecoaching.com/apply. And we encourage you to tune into our other podcasts. So we've got a lot of great resources there. If you're struggling with trust or affairs, you know, with communication, anything like that, you can gain a lot by going back and listening to our previous episodes as well. All right. Next week, I'm excited for this one. Mark, this is an announcement for you because I just thought of it. So this is hot off the press. Next week, we're going to do a live communication assessment with you all, which is something that we've been working on. It's going through different questions to assess where your communication is at currently. So we'll be asking questions with you live, and you can answer them to find out where are you kind of on the communication spectrum, and is it possible for you to open up more communication? Maybe your spouse is blocking your text, they're ignoring you, maybe you can't talk without arguing, or maybe you can talk about surface level things, but they won't go deep. So this is going to help you understand where you are, and if you can open up more communication with them, and then how to go about that next step. So that's going to be really fun. Look forward to doing that. Thank you, Mark, so much. And thank you all for listening.
See you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.